Welcome to Season 2 of The Straight and Marrow, a podcast that discusses all things allogeneic bone marrow transplant, from pre-transplant considerations to survivorship, using experiences of healthcare professionals, patients and carers, with current evidence to keep it straight. The Straight and Marrow is sponsored by ARROW, the Bone Marrow Transplant Foundation. ARROW's mission is to improve the survival and quality of life for bone marrow transplant patients and to provide support for carers. Hi, Gail.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm really well. Welcome on behalf of Alex and I
to the
Straight and Marrow podcast.
Thank you for having me.
A show about everything allogeneic bone marrow transplants. And when we say everything, we mean everything, because today we have invited you to come and have a conversation with us about what we've called complementary therapies.
I have to admit, I don't really understand the term.
No. And so what we'd like to do is invite you as a senior and very experienced pharmacist to talk to us about what is the difference between alternative, complementary and integrative therapies.
Yvonne, it's really interesting because in reality, a lot of these therapies that we use can be one or all of none of the above. So when we talk about a therapy that is complementary or alternative, it's one that's not routinely used in conventional medicine. But when we talk about complementary versus alternative, really it's how a person is using it. So it can be exactly the same product, but if somebody uses it instead of or to replace the conventional therapies that we would normally use, then we would turn it alternative because they're using it as an alternative too. If they use it in combination with, so they're still using the conventional therapies but they're taking these therapies as well as, then generally we refer to them as complementary. So most of the time that's what we're talking about, a complementary therapy, because you're still using your conventional therapy. Integrative therapies are complementary, but it's where there is evidence or program where the two, so the conventional therapy and the other therapy, have been combined and are understood. Now, most integrative therapies are routinely maybe something like acupuncture or mind-based therapies as opposed to therapies that people take or ingest. But really, the terms are interchangeable, but really it comes down to if they're being used with or instead of the conventional therapies that the person would normally be on.
So do you think these therapies are becoming more mainstream?
I think there's two things. They're becoming more, not necessarily mainstream, but perhaps more out in the open. Mm-hmm. People are getting more comfortable with talking about other things they may be taking, either to try and augment their therapy or to increase their well-being or for multiple other reasons. In the past, people have maybe hidden it because they've felt that they would be judged or that there would be implications for their conventional therapies if they admitted to using things. Now we're very much trying to get people to be more open about what they're taking so that we can make sure that what we're doing is the safest and the best for the people. Having said that, I think there's also been a huge influx of these things, partially around the internet and availability. And, you know, when you go onto the internet, it's very hard sometimes to tell what is a really good, robust information site and what just looks like a good site but really doesn't have good, robust information on it. So people are perhaps trying things that in the past they wouldn't have.
For my learning, what are these things? Are we talking about supplements? Are we talking about ointments? What is it?
Pretty much all of the above. So when we talk about a complementary therapy or an alternative therapy, most of the time in terms of, I guess, when we talk about medication or medical therapies, we are talking about what we call about an ingested therapy, so something that the person physically takes. But they could be things that are applied, so creams, aromatherapy, oils, all those sorts of things, down to other things, what we call mind-based therapies. So that can be around things like hypnosis, different forms of massage, manipulation, those sorts of things. So I guess from my context as being a pharmacist and working in the medication area, when I talk about complementary therapies, we're routinely talking about things that a person will physically take.
Yep.
But the area covers all of those things.
So is that because you're concerned about drug interactions and the effect on the person's body ability to metabolize the drugs that we're prescribing as part of their cancer treatment?
Yeah, look, when we make recommendations around complementary therapies, and I'll use that term just for ease, we are looking at a couple of things. Safety, because we don't want to make the therapies that we're using any more toxic or any more difficult than they already are. We're also looking at efficacy. So we're trying to make sure that, again, the base cancer therapy or the base therapy that we're giving is the most efficacious it can be. So we don't want anything that may perhaps decrease the efficacy of that. We're looking at potential just general harm to the patient. So we're not trying to find reasons for people to not take things, but we're trying to make sure that their conventional therapies or the therapies that they are taking, which we know have the best evidence for them to have the best outcomes of their disease or their condition, that those are going to be the most efficacious or the most effective, but also safe.
So are you saying you encourage people to have a conversation with their pharmacist, with their nurses, with their medical staff about any complementary therapies that they're taking in conjunction with their conventional treatment?
Yes, very definitely. Our main encouragement is to have that discussion, both when you start your treatment journey, anything that you are currently taking, but then also, if at all possible, before you start taking something, so that we can look at it and assess it and make any recommendations we might want to make. Nowadays, there's not the judgment about people wanting to do what they can to optimise their health, but having the conversation allows us to help you do that. Mm. So the conversation is probably the most important part.
Do you think there is still a bit of stigma towards patients from healthcare professionals?
I think definitely in some perspectives there will always be people who will be very black and white, yes or no. There'll always be people who are on many, I guess, ranges of the spectrum as to how they feel about complementary therapies.
Yeah.
I mean, there is still some stigma. I would say less. People are more, I guess, willing to have the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and despite what us as health professionals, what our personal opinions may be and what we might choose to do in our lives, you know, I think we're getting to the point we are where we no longer, or we don't as often, push that heavily onto other people. We have a conversation so that, you know, everybody's thoughts can come to the table.
Yeah, yeah. Well said.
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing that's happened is that over time there are some therapies that were once considered complementary that have moved into more mainstream therapies as well.
Yes, certainly there's some, and I think this is one of the, sort of a slightly on a side tangent, you know, one of the catchphrases we often hear is, you know, natural is safe.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people believe, so they just assume that if it's not a medication, then it's safe to take. But what we also know is some of our most potent medications, including the drugs we use in cancer, some of those came from plants.
Yes.
So they have, you know, further back in time, and even only up until the 90s, have a herbal background as such, in that, you know, the activity was found to come out of plants. And now it's been synthesized and refined so that we can control that activity a lot better. But, you know, I think that proves that if some of our most potent medications we have, both in cancer and in heart disease and in other diseases, originally started out as plant extracts, then not all plant extracts, you know, they obviously have activity. So we know that they have activity, but we also know they
have side effects.
Potentially have side effects,
yeah,
or have issues with patients. And I think there's also the converse. There's been what we would term natural therapies or alternative therapies that have been pushed very hard, and there's been, you know, these great reports come out about how they've cured cancer, and yet it's been shown later that they were very, very dangerous therapies. But we see a resurgence of those therapies come back. It's often it's like you see this ebb and flow. You know, a great example of that is what we call Laetrile, which was in the 70s and 80s. There was all this data coming out saying how it was curing cancer and all these sorts of things. The data wasn't true.
Did they make it up? This is before my time. What's Laetrile?
So Laetrile is actually amygdalin, which is the compound which is in apricot kernels.
Oh.
So when we hear about people taking apricot kernels for cancer, this is where amygdalin or Laetrile came from. And what it actually is it's a source of cyanide. So cyanide is obviously a major poison. And when they went back and looked, when they were saying they were curing people, there wasn't, but they saw changes in people, but it was because these people were responding to the cyanide. So what they were seeing was a toxic response to the cyanide, which is the innate part of what this agent is. So that's all been very clearly shown, that there's absolutely no evidence for it having any activity in cancer, let alone curing people. And these studies didn't come out of the medical profession. They didn't come out of the scientific community. They came out of the alternative community.
Right.
But we do still see people importing apricot kernels or Laetrile, amygdalin, vitamin B17 is another term they use for it, importing it or using it. Very rarely they're using it solely to treat the cancer. Alternatively, they're using it in combination. But we know that it's a very, very toxic substance.
How do people navigate their way through all of the information?
Yeah.
We've already mentioned the internet. You know, we all have experience of people who come to see us for clinical reviews who say, I've got a friend who told me about this really good treatment, or I know someone who knows someone who tried this and they're cured. How do the people in our community, our healthcare community, how do they wade their way through all of this?
I think that's the really hard thing, and it comes down to having, not to reiterate it yet again, but having those conversations, because when they say, oh, well, you know, I saw this, and often they'll bring reams of paper or, you know, send the website, and when you read it, whilst it might read to begin with very scientifically, you can look back to see where the evidence is coming from or what they're supporting it with. You know, a lot of these people are saying, oh, we have robust scientific data, but they can't actually produce the robust scientific data they're talking about. You know, this is more the people who are trying to push, I guess, therapies, so cures, more so than if you talk about your standard sort of complementary therapies, which are more around helping you navigate and wellness and that sort of thing with your therapies. But when it comes to some of these other ones where they're pushing it, you know, as a cure, or, you know, you don't need conventional therapy, you just need to go on the alkaline diet as an example. The alkaline diet, there's hundreds of pages on the internet out there, but there's not a scientific paper that actually shows responses.
And yeah, that's really good information. So are there any particular red flags that people listening, our patients, should look out for when navigating their way through all of this?
Some things to look out for is if all the evidence comes from one person. So if they start, if they say, this has been published hundreds of times, but all the papers are by the same author. I know that sounds silly, but that sort of says, well, this is this one person doing it. There's not a strong scientific community behind it. Because if we look at the evidence for our medication, there might have been a doctor or a group of scientists who are behind a medication or a treatment, but there's a group of people. If it's always coming the same person, if it's always coming out of the same laboratory or whatever, that's a sign. The other thing is when all the evidence is anecdotal as opposed to robust. So it's like we cured four people of their cancer, but there's no ability for them to show evidence of the cancer in the first place or show evidence of the cure, when it's just, you know, anecdotal. So it's saying, you know, 77 people took this and 60 of them are cancer free. So it's more sort of hearsay or quotes or people saying, oh, you know, my mother-in-law took this, she had breast cancer and now she's been cured. You don't know what the mother-in-law took or had, or even if the mother-in-law, you know, had cancer or even exists. You know. The other thing is going to, I guess, reputable sources. So, you know, ideas of places like, A, coming to your health professionals and saying, can you have a look and see if this seems reasonable? Or reputable sources, the National Cancer Institute in America has a great website where they talk about a lot of therapies. So you can have a look and see if you can find information about these things on reputable websites. And if you're not sure what a reputable website, again, is, talk to, you know, your pharmacist in the hospitals or your doctors, and they can talk to people and point you towards a reputable site. A very good site if you want to look up around different supplements as to whether they're safe, it's a cancer-directed site. It's called Memorial Sloan Kettering, MSK About Herbs, or About Herbs, Botanicals and Other Products. I believe it's full time.
We can pop the link in the show notes if anyone wants to check that out.
That's a really easy one. It's designed and it's got non-health professional friendly information in there about a lot of supplements. So if you just want to see information around, you know, their safety and that sort of thing, that's a really good website. It's run through the Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital in the States. So again, it's run through a cancer group who look at the evidence for a lot of these things. So that's a really good reference as well.
So we can't talk about these sorts of therapies without having a conversation about medicinal cannabis. It certainly in the last few years, medicinal cannabis is being used more prevalently in and outside of cancer care. Can you talk to us about it, its availability?
What's it for?
You know, how people are accessing it, you know, either through prescription or not, and what, you know, what your recommendations are around people's utilisation?
Yeah, I think cannabis or medicinal cannabis is a really, really interesting topic for many, many, many reasons. I think what we have to do is separate out medicinal cannabis as in the registered products that are supplied on prescription by a medical practitioner for a specific reason, from those where it's a person self-supplying, so accessing it somehow and deciding on their own treatment regimen, or perhaps being directed by somebody other than a medical practitioner. So I guess on one side you've got what is truly medicinal cannabis, and on the other side you've got what we would probably call complementary cannabis therapy. The thing with cannabis too is there's sort of two main compounds we always talk about, the CBD and the THC. And the THC, or the tetrahydrocannabinoid, that is the, I guess, what we talk about, the active substance when you smoke cannabis that gives you all the cannabis effects. And the CBD is the non-active component in terms of the, I guess, the recreational use of cannabis. But both are also very important in terms of the therapeutic uses. What is my feeling? I think cannabis definitely has its place for people who have struggled to find therapy with other conventional therapies. Does it cure everything it's listed to cure? Definitely not. Does it fix everything it's listed to fix? Definitely not. Because, you know, you can find something that says cannabis will fix or cure pretty much anything, from fixing cancer to helping with the nausea. We know it's got great evidence for helping with nausea and pain for some people in some situations. So it's one of those things that may or may not work for some people. But what we always say is, outside of when it's being prescribed, so we know exactly what is in it and we know how much CBD, how much THC is in it, and it's a cleaner product. When it's being self-sourced, we don't always necessarily know that. So you may be thinking you're buying or obtaining a very CBD-driven product, but we don't know what else.
Well, there's no quality control.
In some times. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. But certainly, you know, a lot of people who are producing this outside of the conventional arenas, you know, then you are having troubles with that. And the other thing with cannabis is it has a lot of potential concerns and interactions with our other therapies. So we've got to be careful about when we're using it. It can, again, have similar to those drug interactions, or what we'd call, you know, complementary therapy supplement interactions with different medications and drugs that we use. So again, knowing exactly what product is being used is important, because THC and CBD act differently and they react with drugs differently. So knowing if somebody's taking CBD or THC or a combination of the two is actually important for us to also work out whether they're potentially going to affect their other therapies.
I know you said that people can claim that it can do everything. What are some proven uses for cannabis?
So very definitely, I guess if we talk about the cancer arena, we know that mainly the CBD or CBD similar components, because again, cannabis has probably 100 different components in it. CBD and THC are the main two, but some of what we call the cannabinoids are very, very effective in nausea.
Yep.
Having said that, they're probably as effective as metoclopramide. When you look at the studies, that's what they were studied against. They were studied against things like metoclopramide, so not the more potent anti-nausea tablets that we have now.
Yep.
So when we think of the potent anti-nausea tablets we have now, if they're say an 8, then the cannabinoids are probably a 2 or a 3.
Right.
So they're potentially good as an add-on. They're not going to work instead of.
Yeah.
We know that definitely THC is good for cachexia or for appetite.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody knows that. So we do know if we have patients who are struggling with that sort of thing, then sometimes a THC product can help with that. We know it can be, again, a useful add-on in some types of pain.
Yeah.
Again, it pretty much, most of the time, cannabis is an add-on. It's something you use to add on to other things, or when other things have failed, it's not normally you go to first. Outside cancer, we do know that there's some very good evidence for some of those pediatric seizure conditions.
Yeah.
Not necessarily just plain old, not plain old ordinary, but, you know, simple epilepsy, but those very complex seizure conditions. We know there's definite evidence for that, mainly in the pediatric setting. There's no evidence that's robust and strong for it having any activity in actually cancer itself, so the treatment of cancers. There's lots of evidence, but no good robust scientific evidence at this point in time. I'm not saying that there wouldn't be at some times, but I think we have to be clear that at the moment the evidence is for it as an add-on in a lot of those places. And even then the evidence, you know, as I said with nausea, it's not a potent anti-nausea tablet.
Yep. And how do they take it? Is it a tablet? Or do surely they can't smoke it? Seems
no,
anti
so
everything we've been taught.
Yes. Smoking cannabis doesn't actually allow the body to take in the amount of any of those active compounds that we need in big enough quantities. So the only potential therapeutic uses of smoking cannabis would be perhaps relaxation and or eating.
Yep.
But the majority of people, cannabis is normally as a liquid, which is designed as, and you take it by the drop. So that's the major way. There's a few other. There's a cannabinoid-based nasal spray, but most of the time it's taken orally as a drop.
Oh, that's interesting.
Gail, that's been fascinating, and I think our listeners will find it really informative. If you have one piece of advice that you would like to give us and our listeners, so anyone who's considering exploring complementary therapies, what piece of advice would you give them?
I think explore them, talk to people. And when I say talk to people, I guess I'm talking mainly health professionals. Don't talk to your auntie, your neighbour, because their anecdotal experience is the same as anything else. It's anecdotal experience. Ask and think about it and make a decision before you purchase, because a lot of these are very, very expensive. So, you know, don't put yourself under a financial burden until you've had a chance to actually think through your decision, much like, you know, any other big financial purchase. But I think it's be open, have the discussion, and go from there.
That's great. That's fantastic advice.
Yeah, that is good advice.
And great advice to end on. Thanks, Gail.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks for listening, and hope you've enjoyed the podcast as much as we have. Just a reminder that although our Straight and Merry team are experienced healthcare professionals, we are unable to give individual medical advice. If you have a medical query, please speak to your treating team. See you next time at The Straight and Marrow, and don't forget to subscribe to receive podcast updates. And for more information about ARROW, the Bone Marrow Transplant Foundation, go to arrow.org.au.